Hi, this is Mike Delp with the Relax Back UK show on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. On the Relax Back UK show, we explore all kinds of health topics, so keep listening and enjoy the ride. Hi, and thank you for joining me, Mike Dilk, on the Relax Back UK show. This week, the subject is offices. There's been lots of talk about the return to offices to get back to work or not, or whether we should all be doing hybrid working, etc. I do think that many large companies have been really worried that staff's sort of personal objectives may have changed with COVID, and actually they don't want to spend their whole life at work. Mind you, with the current economic situation, maybe that's changing.
Now, pre-COVID, the idea was to try and attract and retain talent. They've got to be competitive. So some of the big companies spent an awful lot of time and money investing in their spaces to make them really attractive, to kind of get these new people in and to keep them there so they're not going to go looking for other jobs. Over the COVID period, we've really seen a heightened interest in this because a lot of companies are realizing they're going to have to work very hard to get people back into their office spaces.
The attractiveness of the physical workspace and how nice it is to be in and the effect of it on our well-being is something that consultant ergonomist and physiotherapist Juliette Rain knows a lot about. Then how about art on the office walls? Does the process of deciding to have works of art in the workplace and what sort of art it should be, does that help build community?
So we decide what we want in the space and we therefore bond. And because the organisation has trusted us to do that, we bond with the organisation that let us do it. So it reduces us and them. And again, that builds up mental cohesion, psychological belief within an organisation.
Work-based psychologist Dr. Craig Knight helps answer this question. So please do stick around for a very interesting show.
This show is cool!
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So it doesn't seem like there's been a large-scale return to the office. Lots has been written about it, and actually a lot of the points I'm about to say are lifted from a Guardian newspaper article. But in this article, also something that I've noticed myself, there really is kind of a tug of war that staff are facing. Staff are kind of enjoying, on the whole, working at home and spending less time travelling. There's some real problems with getting around on trains in the north of the UK at the moment, and in the Midlands, I think. It's been a real problem for a lot of people. If you don't have to travel to work, you don't have to go through the commute, the vagaries of will the motorway be blocked and times of car travel, etc., etc., and you save a lot of money. So for many people, working from home is a positive. Then you've got the managers. They're liking in-person interaction. They like to see people in the office. Whether that's because they really need to have people in the office, or it kind of self-affirms their job because people are in and then they can manage them, they can talk to them. I don't know. I imagine it's a little bit of both. One thing's for sure, the London Underground, the Tube, has much fewer travellers. It's a quarter of pre-pandemic levels, the amount of people travelling in the rush hour. When I read that, I found that hard to believe because I've been on the Tube recently and it seems pretty full to me, although it's always been full. It is an international question. This is not just a problem in the UK and London. Apple, the US tech giant, got into trouble, but some issues. Tim Cook, the CEO, told staff that he expected them to be in 3 days a week at the end of the summer. It didn't go down well. There was a petition against it. One high-level employee quit to Google. So there's definitely some issues there. Hybrid working, so that's kind of a mixture of the two, coming into work occasionally, leads to smaller offices. Not everyone needs their own desk. This can lead to saving quite a lot of money on expensive office space. In fact, HSBC in their headquarters in Canary Wharf, London, told staff it was looking whether to keep its large HQ there when the lease was up. So maybe this is actually asking more questions than we're getting answers for. Someone who can give some answers about the potential future design of offices is Juliette Rain. She's a consultant ergonomist and physiotherapist. I actually spoke to her from Sardinia. So the first question she could give an answer to was, why were you talking to me? Why are you talking to me from Sardinia?
Oh, the classic, love. So my husband is from the town that we live in now. And we decided several years ago that my work as a consultant was done quite a lot from home. So I would very often go into a company for a few days, deliver some consultancy or deliver some training or something like that. And then I would be going home and actually planning, writing, organising things. And so we decided that I would do that from Sardinia and come back three or four times a year to actually deliver to my clients. And it's been working really well for us.
Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. Well, and so what I want to do is talk about an aspect of your work, really, and what you've sort of seen happening over the last few years to do with office layout. Now, we met at the Clerkenwell Design Week, actually at a lecture given by some very high-flying designers of offices. And it was all about the future of the modern office and that kind of thing. And my thought is that actually, you know, the design of offices has changed enormously in the last few years, and I can see you kind of nodding your head, so agree. So kind of what's going on, what's changing about our offices now?
So there's been a lot of changes in the last sort of probably I'd say 10 or 15 years. There's been a real big focus on office design. You know, gone are the days of the 1970s, 1980s, huge open plan offices where every desk is exactly the same and you're not sure where you are in the building because it looks literally just the same. It's not a stimulating environment, and it's been shown to not be brilliant for, you know, health and well-being, especially from a mental health point of view and from a productivity point of view. So a lot of companies, and I think it probably started with your Google and your Facebook, you know, putting in mushrooms instead of chairs and slides to get from A to B, you know, they sort of started this this thing of trying to make an office environment much more fun and a place that people actually want to be and they want to spend time. And that's kind of evolved because, you know, the Google office doesn't suit every type of company. If you've got, you know, the majority of your staff are 50 plus and you do, you know, legal things, you probably don't really want them sliding down a slide to get to a meeting.
They might put their back out and be off.
Absolutely, you've got to be very careful. So what we've seen instead is we've seen what we tend to refer to now as hotelization of the office space. And what that means is that, you know, we're almost seeing areas that almost look like the waiting area or the reception area of a hotel Replacing certain parts of the office. So we refer to it as soft seating. So you might find couches, benches, booths, and different spaces. And companies are doing this to make sure that they're really becoming attractive. Now, pre-COVID, the idea was to try and attract and retain talent. They've got to be competitive. So some of the big companies spent an awful lot of time and money investing in their spaces to make them really attractive, to kind of get these new people in and to keep them there so they're not going to go looking for other jobs. Over the COVID period, we've really seen a heightened interest in this because a lot of companies are realizing they're going to have to work very hard to get people back into their office spaces.
Yeah. Actually, one thing that I've noticed is people's attitude to life actually in general, not just work, has changed. You know, they're thinking, actually, Completely. Do I really want to work, you know, all these hours every day? I'm not sure I do. Maybe I'll go and work for someone else who's slightly less demanding. And I get the feeling some of the big companies are absolutely terrified that their staff are just going to melt away.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, over the pandemic, people working from home has worked much better than a lot of companies ever would have dreamed of. So, you know, companies have remained, on the major part, very productive. The problem is that without that face-to-face collaboration, they really struggle to drive business forward. So we can do an awful lot remotely, but if we really want to build relationships, we want to have an environment and a workforce who are gelled and cohesive and really doing well and moving things on in industry, whatever that industry is, we now realize we really need that face-to-face contact. And so, you know, you've got a lot of people who are sitting at home and they're saying, I don't want to have to commute an hour and a half anymore. You know, I'm not willing to do that. I want to work from home. And like you say, companies are really scared because they know that they've got to bring people back into the office to do really well, or they've got to find other ways that they can get this, you know, contact, those what we call all the water cooler conversations, you know, the conversations outside of a formal meeting, the things that happen before or after or during a smoking break or whatever it is. And that's where this new design trend is really being driven forward. And it's being proposed to a lot of companies by designers with the idea of attracting people back into the workplace. And I think that's been the major driver, certainly over the last 2 years, to try and help with that.
How about the idea of not just attracting people into the workplace, but actually making the kind of workplace more efficient and being a breeding ground for good ideas, stuff like that? Now, I you know, obviously, if you've got rows and rows of desks all pointing in the same direction, you know, no one even really looks at each other, let alone talks to each other and invents the next great idea. But so you need something a bit more collaborative than that. But there's this term, collaborative workspaces. What is a collaborative workspace?
It's a great question. It's anything that you want it to be is the answer to that. And that's the answer always in ergonomics. It's always, it depends. So a collaborative workspace should be a space that is open and flexible, and it encourages open conversations. Now, some companies might view the areas where people are working and eating as a collaborative workspace, and they sort of have multi-purpose spaces, if you like, zones where you could touch down and have a meeting, but equally you could sit and eat your sandwich. They tend to be non-desk focused, okay? So you might have larger tables that encourage more people to sit around. You might have the sort of booth, almost like, you know, an American diner, that kind of booth feeling, which gives you something a bit closed and a bit private to allow these conversations, but always away from a traditional desk feel. That's what collaborative spaces should be. Some of them you'll find encourage standing. So you'll find sort of higher work surfaces, so tables that are much higher, usually with some stools that are much higher. But the idea of that is it encourages people to also stand whilst they're having a chat, because we've seen in the research that standing and being able to move a little bit is actually very good for idea generation. So for creativity and for getting ideas out there, having sort of that little bit of movement involved within your conversation can actually be really, really positive. So you'll see different height surfaces, you'll see different textures, you'll see different levels of acoustic protection. So some areas very open, some areas very closed. And a lot of this sort of design really depends on what people are really doing within that company. You know, we said before, Google offices are not suitable for every type of worker, but likewise, you know, a big open collaborative space for a call center might not be the most, you know, the best use of space anyway.
And presumably a member of staff, if they're in the office all day, they wouldn't be expected to be in one of these particular spaces all day. They'll move around doing different things in different areas, which is something which is pretty, I mean, I'm 56, you know, it's a bit alien to old dinosaurs like me, really.
Yeah. Well, what we do tend to find is what we call nesting. So we do tend to find that different people gravitate towards different environments, and it might be the natural light that's in different areas. It might be the acoustic protection that's in certain areas. It might be that they're close to colleagues that they want to be close to. But we do tend to find, you know, with the vast majority of people, they tend to nest. So they tend to want to gravitate towards a particular area. The issue that we do have is we often find, especially in the younger generation who have grown up with, you know, with laptops and with portable devices and maybe don't currently have any aches and pains or problems when using them, they're tending to nest in these collaborative spaces because they're fun and open and they see their colleagues come and they can all get together and work on a table together, for example, and they've been provided with a laptop that allows them to do that. But that isn't actually how the areas are designed to be used. So it is a danger, and it is something that when companies create these collaborative spaces, they really need to be, you know, putting some level of training in for their workforce just to say, look, you know, this is how you get the most out of this environment. But when you're going to do this kind of work, maybe think about using a more traditional desk. And what we're seeing in a lot of offices, which is really positive, is looking at increasing the adjustability within the normal office area as well. So we're seeing a lot more companies putting in height adjustable surfaces. We're seeing them put in better quality seating. We're seeing them put in some areas that have, you know, real acoustic protection, like the little sound booths that you get for when people need to have private conversations. So it's really about helping people understand, how should I use my environment? What's the best for me and for the tasks that I do? And if we do that well, it can really boost productivity.
Yeah, all right, let's look at that a little bit more, because obviously it seems to me with these new designs, you know, they're less boring, you know, so people want to be there. It's a bit more exciting, potentially more creative if people are talking to a little bit, each other a little bit more. But you touched on, you know, potentially a couple of drawbacks. In that, well, the one I picked up on is, you know, if you're using a laptop all day on a sofa, you know, that's not very good for you. And you might get away with it when you're 20, but age 40, you might be thinking, I wish I hadn't done that for the last 20 years.
So, absolutely.
And we've only just solved some of these issues when we're all sitting at our desk, same desk all day in lines. And now we've stopped that. And are we creating another load of problems for ourselves potentially?
So the ideas behind posture have evolved somewhat in the last few years as well. And what we can see quite strongly is that exact posture, so the actual posture people adopt, doesn't seem to be linked to particular issues. So it's not that everybody who slumps will get lower back pain, for example, or everybody who sits looking one direction because they're twisting to look at a screen or looking down at the laptop screen will get neck pain. You know, there isn't that correlation. And, you know, the difference there is probably the stuff outside of work. So if they're doing the same postures inside of work, it's general lifestyle and movement. So, you know, I spend a lot of my time training people how to do DSE assessments and how to support people at work. And the way I train people has changed a lot in the last few years. And now the focus really is on, you know, yes, there are better ways that we can position ourselves. But the bottom line is we need to get people moving. Because if we're staying still, and this is probably the big problem that we've seen with people working from home and everything's online, if we're just not moving sufficiently during the day, it doesn't matter how perfect your posture is when you are sitting still, you're still sitting still. So, you know, we might find, and we often do find frustratingly with these 20-year-olds who've come in, well, I don't suffer with any problems. And it's because, you know, they haven't yet got the full responsibilities of life. They're able to go to the gym 5 times a week. They're able to go out and socialize. They're able to do stuff outside of work. And that really works to prevent the problems that, you know, when your life is maybe a lot more sedentary, the problems that we tend to see. So the focus really is on movement. And that's the other thing about zoning the office into different areas, is if we can encourage people not to always be sat at the same desk, and they're going to another place to make that private phone call, and then they're going to another place to have that face-to-face meeting, or even dial into a hybrid meeting, and then they're going back to, you know, one type of desk where they can set themselves up really well because they're doing some more focused work. And then, you know, later on, again, they're going to go and sit with a colleague and work after lunch for a couple of hours because they just want to be close to that person. Then we're really introducing a lot more movement. And that's one of the positive sides if we train people that that's what we're trying to do. So, you know, it's not about exact posture. It is about movement. But you're absolutely right. If we've got somebody sitting with a laptop, you know, heaven forbid, on a coffee table, so really low, and I see it, and they, you know, they're doing their meetings from there, and they're, you know, sitting, reaching forward and stooping down, and doing a lot of focus work, we would expect that in the coming years, it's more likely that they would get issues, especially if their movement outside of work starts to drop down.
I get it. So the way you help a lot of companies is kind of training staff to use these new areas fully. So it's easy to say that, but I guess you've also got to try and break habits.
Yeah.
Now that strikes me as quite tricky, actually, getting people to break habits. It might not be a lifetime, but it could be of, you know, a couple of years or a few months.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's really important. Well, it's important. Timing is important. We don't want to break habits. We want to instill good habits. So when companies are changing the workplace, or when they're bringing people onto their workforce, they need to be getting that training right at the beginning. So we need to be informing people about these different areas. And what we often do is myself and colleagues, we often go in at the sort of beginning of a company moving into a workplace, and we're physically there to do little workshops with people in different areas, teach them how to sort of set themselves up at the normal desks, talk to them about why they should and shouldn't be using certain areas for different tasks, give them ideas about how they can use the different areas which they might not have thought about. But the important thing, if we're trying to instill behaviors, is it's got to mean something to the individual. Because there's no point doing a standard thing that you expect is going to suit 3,000 people in one office, because 3,000 people are not the same. Their brains don't work the same. They need to be taught in different ways. Some people need written materials that they can look back on and digest. Some people might need a video. Some people might need a face-to-face. Some people might need a physical demonstration. They might need to try it themselves to instill that learning. So it's important that we think about the diversity within a company as well when we're trying to get this right. So in an ideal world, what we try to do is we would get involved at the design stage. More often what happens is we're not involved right at the beginning, and we're then having to kind of retrofit things or sort of fix problems later on, which obviously then costs more. So, you know, if we can get in at the design stage with the designers who, you know, are obviously going to make sure everything's compliant legally, fits all the standards and looks great, and they're looking at flow and light conditions and air quality and everything like that, if we can bring in from an ergonomics and a physiotherapy point of view that real health and well-being, but as part of that really looking at what do those people do, so what that's what we call a task analysis, is we need to understand within a company exactly what do different people within that company do as their tasks. Because if we understand that, we can guide them as to how to do those tasks well and where in an office they should be doing it, but also help them get their collaborative spaces right, you know, their open spaces. Because if the tasks that the majority of people do not suit those environments, there's no point having those environments cover 50% of the floor space. Maybe we need more. It'd be empty, yeah. Or full and used badly. So, you know, we need to do that.
Do you find that actually designers are calling you up and saying, right, I'd like you to be on board now? Or, you know, obviously you'd like more of that. But is that starting to happen?
Unfortunately, it tends not to, because, you know, we all think that we're the best at what we do. And, you know, especially designers who've done it before and they've, you know, put things in, and often the top end clients, you know, the managers are super happy with their environment because it takes a while for us to see problems. Mm. So often this feedback doesn't necessarily go back to the designers. So they don't necessarily realize, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line, what we're having to change, you know, unless the company goes back to that designer for retrofit design. So, you know, there's and also the other thing is cost. Every designer wants to deliver with the lowest cost possible for their client. Mm-hmm. So if you add in the cost of the ergonomics consultant, which might just be one day of consultancy to just sign things off and tweak things a little bit, then, you know, that's not a huge cost. But if you're going to get, you know, real good collaboration where we're looking at task analysis to really understand the company and the needs of the company, we're feeding that into the design team, giving them sort of, look, specification wise, it'd be great if we could have, you know, 30% of desks do this, and we've got an area that does this, and we need meeting spaces that can hold up to 200 people, for example. If we can help them and support them, the end product is always going to be better. And that's either in a whole office, or it might be a certain aspect of an office. Like recently, I've been involved in the redesign of a reception area, which was going down a very potentially difficult route, where the receptionists themselves have said, we want a desk that's higher, but based on no real foundation of knowledge and information. And it was completely the wrong thing to do for 9 out of 10 of the people who worked at that reception desk. And they would have introduced that higher work surface and then had problems with footstools, having to get specialist chairs that go within a certain range, and all sorts of other problems.
Yeah.
And we've managed to work with the designer before it was too late to make sure they've designed an absolutely wonderful, fully adjustable, probably the first of its kind reception desk. And that's really exciting to get involved in those and get it right.
All right. Well, it sounds like there is room for improvement, but, you know, good things are happening in this kind of new look office. So, a couple of questions. Is it your experience that this is a difficult question, an impossible question, really, but I specialize in them. Generally speaking, these sort of more modern offices with different sections, have they been proven to you to be better for people physically?
So we've got to think about the connection between mental health and physical health.
That was going to be my next question, mental health. So answer them both at the same time.
So from a mental health point of view, absolutely. If we can stimulate people and make their life that little bit more enjoyable because they're in different spaces like this, then absolutely it's a positive. That then can have an immediate benefit on the physical health, because if we are more relaxed, if we're less anxious, less depressed, one, we don't feel pain in the same way. So even if we have problems, the pain is physically sort of less of an issue for you. But two, you know, just the physical tension that you hold, you know, we know when somebody's anxious, their shoulders are up towards their ears, and you can see the tension in them. So if we don't have that, because people are, you know, not dreading coming in because they're always sat next to that person who chats really loud on their video calls, or, you know, there's somebody who types really loud, or the temperature's not right in that particular area of the office. If we give people that flexibility and that adjustability, then that has an immediate impact on mental health. And then the benefits of that on physical health are great. The problems, obviously, is the physical side when people don't know how to set themselves up.
Yes.
That's going to be a problem in any kind of office space.
No. All right. So All right, now let's look at things from the employer's point of view. They've spent all this money on a new office. The staff are happy. They're in great physical shape. Do they get better productivity? Do they get better collaborative working? What's in it for them?
Yeah, so they should for both of those. So if they get it right, so if they encourage the use of those spaces correctly, they absolutely should get both of those. They should get, you know, a happier, healthier workforce. If you're happy and healthy, you're not distracted by pain, and you're motivated to do your work, you're going to be more productive. So, you know, if you're mentally stimulated.
And less of a turnover in staff as well, which actually costs companies a lot of money, I think.
Huge amount of money, you know, just getting some, you know, advertising for talent, recruiting talent, it takes time and, you know, it takes an awful lot of money. So if you can keep that talent in and develop that talent in-house, then that's got to be a better way to, you know, to move things forward. But yeah, you know, from a productivity point of view or from a driving business forward point of view, if you've got the right kind of collaboration at the right time in the right place, then ideas are generated and conversations happen and things move forward. From an employee point of view, you also find that people who are face to face in a company and participating in these kind of informal conversations, they tend to be the people that go higher up quicker within a company, because they are more memorable, they're there. And so for somebody who is starting their career, if they're going into the office and they are in the right spaces, being visible to their managers, you know, being showing themselves to be productive and participating in this sort of collaboration, which is encouraged by the environment, then they're the people that come to mind when they're thinking of, oh, we need somebody that can do this or somebody that can do this other task. So we do tend to see there is a link as well between career progression and active participation in these sorts of situations. Yeah. All right. And collaborative space helps that.
Active participation doesn't necessarily mean competence, I'm thinking.
No, but then, you know, if you look at any structure within a company, I wouldn't necessarily say the people at the top are always, probably a controversial thing to say, they're not necessarily always the best at what they do. They're the people that have been in the right place at the right time and, you know, put themselves out there a lot of the time. So that's probably horribly controversial, but certainly I see it in every industry.
There'll be movers and shakers, and actually that's often what you need to get things done.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Interesting. All right, so look, if people are listening to this and say there's someone who runs a big bank or something and thinking, right, I'm building a new office, I must get Juliet on board to make sure everything goes smoothly. Mm-hmm. Two things really. How can they get hold of you? And where in general can they go for more information about this sort of stuff?
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, there's lots of places you can get information. And I think it depends where you are geographically. So I consult sort of on a sort of global scale. I consult very often through other companies as well. So to be able to deliver larger projects where we need more resources, I collaborate with a few different companies who tend to be UK based. So yeah, you can go to find me on LinkedIn. So Juliet Rain on LinkedIn. You can drop me an email, juliet@epf.online. That's echopapafoxtrot.online. You know, I'm more than happy to have informal conversations with people wherever they are to find out, you know, what approach should they be taking. But yeah, you know, wherever people are, you know, from on a sort of global scale, I can't recommend enough getting in touch with an ergonomist or a ergonomist with a health background, if they are going to be looking at trying to instill some kind of behavior change, or they're looking at how do we design better to, you know, attract people in or keep people in, get people back to the office, whatever it is, or just simply reduce injuries. You know, that's a good starting point. And I'm more than happy to, you know, have those conversations with whoever needs them.
Okay, perfect. That's sounds very useful. Great advice for business leaders. So, Juliet, thank you very much indeed for chatting.
No worries. Thank you very much for your time today, Mike.
This show is cool! UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Still on the subject of harmonising the workplace and enticing people back to the office, and can art play a part in all of this? I talked to work-based psychologist Dr. Craig Knight, who knows all about this, but my first question to him was actually, what is a work-based psychologist anyway?
Well, in my case, it's somebody who looks at how well-being, performance, and engagement can be maximized in the workplace. And those three things tend to go together. And for this particular survey, we're really looking at mental well-being and happiness.
When you said that, my mind immediately went back to my maths school days, and I thought of a Venn diagram where all those things intersect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not too bad. And we haven't found a place yet where people have been too happy or where their mental health has been too good. You know, there always seems to be a place where people are at their best when they feel good. But that's quite a nice thing to find.
Okay, well, let's explore that a little bit, because there's been a lot of discussion about and this is more related to office working, I think. Certainly, this is since COVID. You know, are people going back to work? Do they prefer working at home, or is that a bit lonely, or do they like to be working with their dog underneath the desk? You know, and it depends kind of who you talk to. You get the impression of, right, we're all working from home, or right, we're all going back now. So what's the latest as far as you're concerned, as far as you think might be happening? What's the current thought?
Well, I think if you start at 2019 and go back, there's almost been nothing new in office development for 100 years. All the stuff that was said to be new isn't. And now we have a chance to make the office a place where somebody want to be rather than where they have to be. And it's a really good chance to grasp this. And this is why I think that the Brookfield properties need to be congratulated on this, because using art is quite psychologically useful as a way of, first of all, just of enriching somewhere. Because what you get is you get something either on the wall or on the floor or wherever it happens to be that is a talking point that people interpret in different ways and that will get people coming together. And the most important point about an office is that it needs to be psychologically engaging, which is why pre-pandemic and what some companies are trying now, this lean, sterile, Spartan box that people were working in should be kicked into touch. We know that's scientifically toxic. And using art in this way is a way to eradicate that and move on to this space where people...
We'll explore that in a moment. This is sort of making the office a pleasant place to be, and art is one potential way of doing it. But let's just step back a little bit. Do different... Yeah. Age groups have different thoughts on whether they want to work at home or go to the office?
That's a lovely question. And you'll know that the results of this survey found that young people, Generation Z, if you like to be in the office quite a lot. Their cohort likes to be in the office more than any other. But generally speaking, it's a thing that affects people per se. Most of us want to be where we feel, this is about to start the point, where we feel happiest, where we feel most at ease. And where we can generate that space is where we want to be, where we perform better, where we engage better. And that affects all ages, but this survey found that it applies particularly to young people.
Well, I'm not as young as I was, and I quite like working at home. And I think that's because, you know, I've made my friends, I've met my wife, I've got kids, I'm kind of happy. I don't have a real need to go out and meet loads of new people. Do you think it's as simple as that? Nothing's ever as simple as that, but yeah.
Nothing's ever simple. And what we tend to find with people that do work from home quite a lot is that there needs to be somewhere that they go in where they can have proper physical interaction with people. That's a really valuable thing. So even if you work a lot, it's a very useful thing to be able to go in and press the flesh of your colleagues and friends, so to speak. And if you do work from home a lot, again, what we like is some kind of almost an umbilical link, if you want, to the workplace. And use this analogy before. Do you remember Harry Potter? And the filmed in Harry Potter, where you had pictures where people walk from one frame to another frame in another building.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? It's quite good if you can use art, and art's a good way of doing it, to connect, say, a group of people have engaged in choice. So you have a choice that people have enriched their workspaces. So you can get a space at home and a space in the office. So there's a link between the two. So working at home is fine, but we also want to have the office as a place where people want to go, because it's good for people to have a social communion.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on. It's got to be a place where people want to go. And so, you know, the idea is that using art somehow can make that happen a little bit more, engage people with the essentially four walls and the floor and the ceiling that is the office, and make it somehow a bit more of an interesting place, a place with a bit of buzz. Now, how do you make that happen? It's got to be a bit more than just picking something that you buy down the market on the wall, hasn't it, presumably?
Absolutely. I mean, look, art is a useful cipher. It's a useful tool. It's because it's so varied. And there are different ways you can do it. Now, the more you engage, with any particular medium of enrichment, the better it is. So if we'll stick with art, because that's what this book feels it was about. So if you look at art, if you just put pictures on the wall, then that's fine. That will enrich the space to an extent. If you, however, then get people involved in what's going on in the workspace, say, what sort of cultural events would you like to get involved with? What sort of art do you like? You might not like art. You might want a sculpture. You might want an artist in your workspace. If you then get involved in what's going on, that then boosts all of these key organizational variables you're talking about quite considerably, by a number of percent. So the more you get involved, the better. But for heaven's sake, start with something that's going to get people engaged in the first place.
So how do you get people involved? Do you like, okay, you have a questionnaire. What sort of art do you want on the wall? Or, you know, how does it work?
Well, that kind of stuff. I mean, there's the thing called the tyranny of choice, which you don't say, well, here you go, guys, what do you want? And they've got this massive array of things. It's best to give people a choice that people are comfortable with. So here's a range of artists. Who would you like to work with? Here's a array of pictures. Here's an array of things you can have. You choose what's best in your workspace. Then you get people talking. What happens then is when you get people talking, you get this lovely thing called congruent identity. So you and I are in a team. So we decide what we want in the space, and we therefore bond. And because the organization has trusted us to do that, we bond with the organization that let us do it. So it reduces us and them. And again, that builds up, you know, mental cohesion, psychological belief within an organization.
Okay, that sounds like perfectly logical. I had another thought. What about if, as well as deciding on the art that's going to be, and you do that as a group or whatever, you could decide, right, who in the group is going to make the art that's going to go on the wall? You know, you could have it, the people that work there, it could be their art on the wall. What about that?
It could be, and that's happened. I worked with a company in Exeter, for example. And they found amongst their midst a really good photographer. And that photographer went around and took pictures of the Southwest, because that's where they loved being. They really liked being in the Southwest of the UK. And those artworks were put on the wall by the company. They paid for those wraparound canvas prints. So all these photographs were on canvas prints, and they went all around the building. And my God, that got people engaged.
I can imagine, yeah. And I bet the guy that took the photos absolutely loved it.
Oh, she did. I mean, she was a really good photographer to start with. And her work then went on the walls, and she got commissioned internally from wedding photographs, all kinds of things came out of that. So she did really well out of it. But the point was that art really brought the company together.
Okay, I mean, it sounds like a lovely thing. Now, the boss is going to be saying, all right, this is all very well, but, you know, come on, this is going to cost me some money. What about, I want some better productivity. I want a bit of proof that this is actually going to be worth my while. Is there any such proof, or is this all just a bit, you know, it's rather nice, but, you know.
You're right, Mike. Okay, first of all, what we have here is a survey, all right? So surveys aren't that good at measuring productivity. So what surveys are good at measuring mental well-being, measuring engagement, measuring identity, measuring happiness, measuring that kind of thing. But what we can say, and I know because I've done quite a lot of it, is that this science is bang in line with all the quantitative objective stuff that we've done, where engagement and enrichment and happiness does increase productivity. There is nothing at all in these data that suggests that we have anything other than a complete congruence of ideas. So yes, the more that you engage people, the science shows, the more that you engage, the more they perform. And we would love to do that as a stage two, because it is possible, for example, that we could demonstrate not only do people feel more creative with art, but they are more creative with art. We could measure that, and that would be fascinating. Love to do that.
Okay, well, how would you do that? How would you design that experiment?
Well, there are loads of ways. I mean, there are lots of ways in which you can look at studies. I mean, if you want a quick, it's slightly off piece, but I'll give you a quick example. Right? If I give you 90 seconds to think of as many potential, not practical, but potential uses you can think of for that pen. That's one creativity experiment. And we could try that, and we could see what effect art has on that and other examples. So there are lots of things we can do just using the kind of stuff that this report highlights on. So we use the same measures, we could put the same amount of engagement and enrichment and move on and see what happens, that as well as being engaged, as well as being happy, what does it do to their productive processes?
Right. No, I can imagine that, because I'm in my office at home, but actually I've got art on the walls here, and it makes me feel much happier, and it's one of many things that can help the creative process, I'm sure, which actually in some ways brings me on to my next question.
Sure.
It's a bit of sort of chicken and egg. So if you have a place, an office where people are creative,
yeah,
is that because they engage with the art on the walls in these different ways, or is it because they work in a place which is more likely to have art on the wall anyway? You know, it's a place that encourages engagement with staff by all these different ways, and having art on the wall is just a symptom of that anyway.
Yep Right, okay, again, this leans into the science that's gone before, because that's a really good question as a one-off. What we find is that whether you are a complete plank like me, or let's say an aesthete like you, you know your art and I don't, enriching a space with art, or enriching a space per se, particularly with art, will increase variables regardless. If you think of, and put this in a context, any animal you like, right? Let's just say you think of a gorilla in a stark, you think of Guy the Gorilla when he first arrived in London Zoo, in those stark concrete enclosures. You can put an ant in a jam jar with nothing. As soon as you enrich those spaces, those animals start to behave in a more content way, shall we say. They start to relax more because they're around things. They've got things with which they psychologically engage. They're miserable in a stark condition. As soon as you put art, pictures, plants, everything is around the space, they become happier. And we're just the same. We are not designed to go into stark boxes unless it's a specific choice that we make. But otherwise, generally speaking, we're not. And art, this Brookfield Property Survey is really good at showing, has come out to say, look how good art is at one, enriching a space, and two, then what's happened when you get engagement going on at the same time. Does that answer your question? That was a long
answer.
Yeah,
no, I think it does answer the question. you did speak about productivity. Are there figures? This is done on the back of a quick survey that's been done. Are there any figures attached to it for increase in productivity, whatever that may be?
They're very wise. The company that did this was a company called Perspectus Global, all right? And they said a really good question, and they're very wise. And what they said is, they said, here is what people think of in terms of their creativity. And they were very wise to bracket that. This is what they think of. Because we know that you can't measure creativity, productivity by just asking people about it. You know, if you go for a marathon run, for example, with nobody timing you, it's not going to say, Mike, how quick do you think you do it? And you go, Mike, faster than Mo Salah, my friend, at the end of it, because we've got to measure it quantitatively. And that's not what we do. So this survey is very much about looking at mental well-being, about, you know, engagement and happiness, as we said before. But that's it, again, that's how this works. This is a survey, and survey is really good at subjective measures, and it's been beautifully constructed to tap into that.
Okay, no, I'll answer that very nice. Now, if people are listening to this, maybe there's a boss somewhere and thinking, do you know what? This could really go nicely with our company ethos or this sort of thing, having some art around, or just more generally, how to breed a bit more engagement with their staff. You know, they want a bit of help. Where can you suggest some good resources to go to give a bit of information, a bit of help?
I think a really good site would be go to the Brookfield property anyway, because that's where this report is. And if you go to the Brookfield website, you can pull off a report, and it will also give you signposts in that report of other places to go. So that's probably a good place to go. You could also look at me if you wanted to, find on LinkedIn, Craig Knight, I'm easy enough to find, and I can give you other resources as well. So that's easy. But you will find some stuff on the Brookfield property site just to kick off. That would be an excellent starting point.
Okay. All right. Look, that sounds useful. So I think that's a perfect place to leave it. So, Craig, thank you very much indeed for chatting.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show, and they were Juliet Rain, consultant ergonomist and physiotherapist, and Dr. Craig Knight, a work-based psychologist. And of course, a big thank you to you for listening.
That was the Relaxed Back UK show with me, Mike Dill. Thank you for listening, and please do join us again next time.